So we're in Shmuel Beis, and we're in chapter Gimel. And last week we talked about the unfortunate circumstances of brothers fighting. Mm-hmm. Even though you have two kingdoms, and each one is going in the other direction, and they really thought they could solve this in a... the rabbis criticized Avner because he said, let the youth have like a jousting match, let them just play at it, let's, you know, and perhaps there was a certain, they were thinking, well, if there's a casualty or two, no big deal. In other words, this will show who's really meant to, who has the real power. Avner was very sure that his people would win, and in fact, what happened was that there were hundreds of casualties. And one of the greatest tragedies was that Saul was killed, and that caused bad blood to come between Yoav and Avner, which we're going to see is going to kind of set the pace for the tragedy that was going to come now. It's important to just look back a drop at what happened in chapter 2, in that there's some discussion here about Avner. Did Avner have to kill him? It seems like from the verse, he said, you know, go to the right, go to the left, leave me alone, like he warned him. Mm-hmm. Yet on the other hand, he killed him. Could he not have just injured him? In other words, if he's such an expert fighter, could he have not just injured him or not? And really, that's the unknown here. Nobody really knows. It's very hard to judge somebody in the thick of battle. And often people reflect on that when somebody kills an intruder, or did they have to shoot them? Could they have just injured them? Did they use excessive force? Did they not use excessive force? That seemed to be part of the question over here. And again, it's going to haunt Avner in a certain way. What happened? Let's take a look here. So chapter 3. So David is king in Hebron. And Ishbosheth, the son of Shaul, is king of the 11 tribes. Ishbosheth does not have, he's not a powerful person. He's really set up through Avner. Avner was the chief general, the very strong, mighty warrior. He was the real basis of the government. And he propped up Ishbosheth out of a sense of duty to the house of Shaul. Chazal say that he had a proof from the Chumash that Jacob was told before Binyamin was born that kings would come out of you. And he was only going to have one more child, which would be Binyamin. And he understood that to mean that there would be two kings from Binyamin. And so it was necessary that the next king come from Binyamin. So he understood that it could be that David at some point would become king, but who said it's right now? In life, a lot of times things are right, but it's always a question of timing. Timing is so crucial. It could be that, was it the time for David? Was it not the time for David? Was it? What is the way to take power? Do you seize power? Do you kill people? Or do you wait till Hashem sends you the message that it's the appropriate way? David was very intent on not forcing his way into power. That's not the way we do things. That's not the Jewish way. The monarchy of the Jewish people was not going to come through blood. In other words, that was if David wanted to, he could have waged a war. David didn't suggest this battle, but it would come through Hashem, not because David was going to seize power. That's not the way that he envisioned it. So let's see. Now it begins to say in chapter 3. It begins like this: And there was a struggle in the nation between these two sides, between the house of Shaul and the house of David. The David holds the chazak, and things kept going. David got stronger and stronger. And the side of Shaul got weaker and weaker. And David's family began to grow. And here we have a brief description of some of the children of David. Some of them we know a little bit about. Some of them we're going to see about later. And some we know very little about. Bibachor, the firstborn son of David, was Amnon. And he was the son of Ahinoam HaYisraelis. Don't know much about her. Umishneu, the second son, was Kaloiv. And this was a son to Abigail. She was the she was married to the guy who was the novel, the what do we call him, the disgusting he was the one that was stingy and just didn't appreciate things and just not a very nice person. She saved David from bloodshed, and David eventually married her, and her son with David was Kiloyev. We have a tradition that he was a great scholar. They say, though, he wasn't interested in being king. Didn't have time for politics. It's just kind of funny, you know, like the, because you don't hear about him. We're going to hear about warriors and others. But if you're a scholar, you don't necessarily want to be busy day and night with politics and running the country. And, you know, he was like a righteous person that was very pious. And he took, you know, there are different aspects to David's personality. And so part of it, he was a scholar also. And so Kiloyev was that, was a great scholar like his father. Vashlishi, the third son, was Avshalom ben Maka, the son of Maka. It identifies the mother because they all had the same father, and the father was busy running the country. So the prominent feature would be how the mother raised them. Now, here, the mother is a foreigner. The Torah mentions that warriors were allowed to take foreign wives in battle. And Chazal say that David made a mistake with that. Not everything that the Torah allows you to do means that it's good for you. In other words, there are things that you are perfectly permissible. In other words, we're not going to flog somebody for doing it, but it doesn't mean the Torah is saying it's a good idea. There has to be a certain amount of common sense or a certain amount of accountability or a certain... We believe that great people were able to see things that we don't see. And so if a person on the caliber of King David saw a woman in battle or in another country and saw that this was a holy person and that it was meant to be his soulmate and they were meant to be united and that somehow it was correct, we have no right to compare that necessarily to the way a young teenager who's on vacation would see a young woman in the same light. It's not the right comparison to that. When a person who's very spiritual, chooses a mate so the only thing was he's faulted for it. In other words, he made mistakes, but we have to assume she was a good person. She was a special lady as well. He must have seen if a person who could write the Book of Tehillim would marry a lady like that and saw fit to take her as a wife. It must be she had redeeming qualities. There were plenty of Jewish wives. He didn't really need to go looking for, you know, just to have a... But on the other hand, by taking such a wife, the Torah, our understanding from history and really from the sages was that the Torah allowed people to take these kind of women, but that if you do, it says that a person will have rebellious children. How can a child... The Torah describes taking a beautiful woman. It's almost like they take the woman because she's beautiful, which is a very material way to choose a wife. It's like a beauty contest, you know. And it's more for the outside than for the inside, because how could you really get to know a person if you're in battle, if you're at war? Is that the time to properly court a person? And it says that if a person marries for beauty, their children won't respect them. And that the Torah talks right after the Torah talks about taking a foreign wife, it talks about having rebellious children. That's the whole part of the Torah about the child that rebels, Ben Sora Amora, the rebellious child. And sure enough, this child of David is going to rebel against him. That's taken from the foreign wife. And so one of the things that the Torah does is even its great people can make mistakes, and we can learn lessons from them, but we have to realize that the mistakes they made may not necessarily be the mistakes we make, and it could be done on a different level, or without whitewashing it was a mistake. But so anyways, this is Avshalom. Va'aravi, the fourth son, Adino ben Kagis, and the fifth son, Shaftiel ben Avital. Va'ashisi Yisram le'eglas Eishes David. Now the sixth one mentions a wife called Egla. We didn't know who Egla is.
Michal.
Oh, okay. Very good. Why doesn't it call her Michal?
I have no idea why they give her this name, but according to the rabbis, she was Michal.
Right, that's
and,
right.
And she was actually his first wife.
Mm-hmm.
And Shaul's daughter.
Right.
And until she rebelled against him and made fun of him and everything, she was his favorite.
Right, right. Very good. Very good. Well, we're going to see about there are a lot of questions about that. David's first wife was Michal. Oxen seem to work best when you put a yoke on them, because the oxen, they take a yoke. In other words, they can be harnessed. A cow, apparently, I'm not a farmer, you can't take a cow and put a yoke on it. It doesn't stick to the task the same way. One view is that she's described as Egla because she couldn't be harnessed, so to speak. She's not that kind of wife. Meaning, we find it like with her father. Her father expected her to be on his side, and she let the husband escape. And then later on, with David, the king of the world and running the country, she gives it to him.
Sure.
So she's described as like a cow, meaning that she, not necessarily in a negative way, but that she didn't accept. She was like she was independent. She had an independent streak to her.
Didn't her father give her to another man?
Yeah, so we'll talk about that. That's coming up. Well, there's a question whether that was temporary, that was permanent, was the other man. Some people say that man was just somebody to watch over her. It wasn't actually a husband. We mentioned there's one view that Palti, who was the... We'll talk about that very soon. There's another view that... some people have nicknames for people that are very special to them. Mm-hmm. In English, we call somebody a dear, or my bunny, or my... So in those days, if somebody was very beloved to you, you'd call them your cow. doesn't ring the same, my Egla.
Well, one of the commentaries is that it was not actually a cow, it was a heifer.
Right.
And there's a difference.
There, yes.
If you want to get into semantics, there's a difference between a heifer and
I didn't mean like a cow, yeah, that's true. I'd say. No, it was a compliment. She was, she to him was his Egla. She was his, like a young, you know, his first love.
Like
so
a little baby animal that you love and you...
and cherish, and it could be that's why she's called that.
Well, first of all, a heifer is younger. And a cow is sort of like a negative connotation, you know. You talk about a person who acts like a cow, you know, stubborn and everything. A heifer is just a pretty little animal, you know, it's like a yearling and a deer or something like that. That would be the connotation of a heifer.
But it is a female.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, the challenge here is that later on we're going to see that something happens that the Torah says that she didn't have children because of what happened with David.
Mm-hmm.
So here it says that she had a son.
Mm-hmm.
So that leads some people to conclude that this is a different person. And other people say that they had children before that point, and it meant after that point they didn't have any more children. And we'll talk about that when we get there as well. Okay, moving along. But this is a basic introduction to the children of David and Hebron. Verse 6, V'yoseh milchama bein beis Shaul bein beis David. And as the battle continued for the heart of the Jewish people, V'avner hayo mischazek v'beis Shaul. The king, Ish-bosheth, didn't even really have his heart in it. He really wasn't a ruler. He didn't, the power in his keeping his kingdom going, that all came from Avner. Avner was the man. U'lishol polegish. Now, Shaul had a concubine, a wife, Ushmo, Ritzba bas Aya. The difference between a wife and a concubine, we've talked a little bit about this in the past. In Judaism, we're not allowed to have a girlfriend, so to speak. In English, what you call a concubine is a different kind of relationship. The Gemara says the difference between a concubine and a regular wife is just whether or not they'll get if the amount of the ksuva. The ksuva is the if you a regular wife is entitled to basically all the wealth of the husband, mm-hmm. or whatever he has to, because everything he is, it comes from her. And so whatever's put into their marriage document, when he takes a regular wife, he's committing that to her and to her children. When people had multiple wives, all their wealth was already accounted for, so to speak. They'd already promised it all to. So if they would take another wife, they would have to tell the wife, "Well, I'm willing to marry you, but I can't commit to you." So a concubine would be a wife where there was no financial commitment as far as the ksuva and the other. But as far as being, you know, an exclusive relationship and obligations to respect and to care for one another, and many times people on their second or third marriage, they don't financially support each other, and that's kept separate, and it's just done, you know, it's just done that way. It's not, but it doesn't mean, in English we say a concubine, it has a very negative kind of, this was a regular wife. But a king would have certain, their first wives would be queens, and their children would be princes and princesses, and would inherit the kingdom and royal positions. And then at some point, they may want to take another wife, but they say, well, we can only have so many princes and we can only divide the kingdom so many ways. And they would be willing to get married, but not to sign over all the wealth and the property. So they would take a pelegish, they would take another wife, but it would be a wife without a monetary commitment. Yes?
Do you mean that, for example, Michal would have all the wealth and the other wives wouldn't, or just the concubines?
Well, it would depend on what was made up when they got married, but typically that would be included in the ksuva, in the marriage settlement. When they get married, they would, you know, the husband obligates himself to pay X amount and to support and to. But when he,
how would he take other wives other than concubines? I mean, how would he marry?
Well, a person can agree to support. So, especially if they're royal, they could mm-hmm. support many wives. But at some point, I guess even a royal person would decide, that they just can't afford anymore, It's hard to know why some became wives and some became concubines. We're going to learn at the very end of the book where David was very sick and he needed a nurse, and they felt that a nurse that would bathe the king, it just was not so appropriate to have a rabbi being bathed by a young woman. And there was discussion in the Talmud that maybe he should marry her so that it would look more appropriate. And they said, well, he already hit the maximum. He was unable to, there were enough, only so many wives that were permitted. And King Solomon made that mistake. He felt in order to bring the Messiah, he wanted to reach out to all these countries, and so he took more wives than he was supposed to. See, we're looking back at it, and we already know what they didn't know. It's very easy after everything has happened, and we have history, to say that wasn't a good idea. King Shaul did have other wives who were not, the children of these wives weren't the royal, they weren't given the royal rights, and they weren't called princes, and they were just regular wives. And this wife's name was Ritzpah, Basiah. And Shaul had died, and in theory she was very eligible, this Ritzpah Basiah. So, there's an idea like this, that it's not respectful to the previous king for a commoner to marry the wife of a king, for a common person to take the wife of a king. Only another king could take the wife. You know, it was just not nice to their memory for a person who was a servant or was underneath the previous king to then marry the wife of the king. That almost shows that you feel that you're royalty if you marry the wife of the king. And there were rumors around that Avner, it's so interesting how, even in those times there were rumors, or the rumor had it that Avner had secretly married the previous wife of Shaul, his master. So, Shaul plegish ushmo ritzpa basaya v'omer al Avner. So, it's not clear whether he did or he didn't. Sometimes you'll never know what really happened. So, but Ish-bosheth heard rumors that Avner had done this, and he felt that was an insult to his father's memory. Mm-hmm. So he called him to task. Ve'yomer el Avner, madua basa plegeshavi. So he said to Avner, he said, how could you do such a thing? How could you take my father's wife? Who are you? Now, keep in mind, Abner was the one that had kept Ishbosheth going. Abner was the one that took all the flack for, you know, putting Ishbosheth on the kingdom. And he was fighting a losing battle, because, as we said, David was getting stronger and stronger, and everybody could see that one day he was meant to be king, and Ishbosheth just didn't seem to have it in him to be the king. And Abner was keeping everything, keeping him in power. And now he castigates Abner. And this Abner at this point really has it. Vayichor la'Abner ma'od, and Abner gets very angry. Divrei Ishbosheth, because of the words of Ishbosheth, and he says like this. He says, Harosh kelev anochi. You think I'm the head of a dog? Asher li Yehuda. Some people say it's like the dog catcher. in other words, what do you think? Who do you think I am? Chopped liver? Like, you know, I'm running the country for you, and you're treating me like you would treat somebody that has the lowest job, that has that's the nothing. And not only that, you're treating me like I'm your enemy. Yehuda was the other side. So you're treating me like I'm the head of a dog to Yehuda. Today, I'm the one who's, if there's anybody who's doing kindness to the house of Shaul, it's me. David, and who is it that doesn't allow David to conquer you and take over? And you're going to mention this today? So, we'll ask the people here today to be the jury. Did he do it or did he not do it? Did he say he didn't do it? Or was it true or was it not true? So, it's unclear. Of course, whatever you were going to say was going to be right.
he doesn't actually answer.
He doesn't answer the question.
So they say the best defense is a good offense.
Yes.
That's what he comes up with, a good offense.
So some people say that he was so offended at it that the suggestion, of course he didn't do it, so he took him to task. And so other people say, no, he really did do it. So if he really did do it, what's the complaint? Mm-hmm. So you could read into the words, even if he did it, is this how you talk to him? Do you do it? You call him to task in front of everybody else? Do you embarrass him in that way? Like, this could have been a private conversation. Mm-hmm. It didn't have to be. If you read the words, it's like betifkod alai. Like you, let's go back to the last few words over here. You accuse me that tifkod. It's almost like you make a point of accusing me in front of everybody and this sin. And when you do it, at the same time where I'm keeping you going, I'm working so hard to keep you in control, and you're accusing me. Now, people see, it's interesting, people see the good points in this, in a sense that Ishbosheth, people sometimes overlook the faults of others. They're willing to overlook something if Ishbosheth was a man of truth. In other words, he felt that if there's something wrong, even if that person is my general, I'm going to tell him about it, right? That's a Jewish kind of, to give it to a person or to. On the other hand, he was insensitive. He evidently got Abner very upset, and he offended him. So there's, I guess it's how you do it, but this one insult changed the face of history, as so often it does. We have a tradition that the Second Temple was destroyed because of somebody that insulted somebody. Somebody got offended, and then they went and they told the Romans, and the whole, there's so many things in history happen because somebody is not sensitive to another person. People have feelings. It's so important not to hurt people.
Is that why he's called Ishbosheth?
Ishbosheth could be, right. He embarrassed people, or I don't know. it's not clear, yeah.
It seems to me that Abner's extreme reaction would indicate that he was guilty.
Really? That's how you take it? Okay.
Well, I mean, it leans a little bit toward that side that he should become so infuriated. I mean, Ishbosheth is the son. The son of Saul, and he just becomes so infuriated.
Usually people are very infuriated if they're falsely accused. You're saying if it's really true, they get very infuriated?
Oh, that's the opposite, actually.
Yeah.
The opposite.
They get upset if it's true, you mean?
If it's not true.
Right, if it's not true, right, yeah. right, that's right.
It just feels like he's being overly defensive. You know, the other question is, why does Ishbosheth say, why were you, the translation may be faulty, but it says, why were you intimate with my father's concubine? It doesn't say anything about him marrying her. It says that he was just intimate with her. That's a real serious accusation, isn't it? Or is that a bad translation?
I understood it as a bad translation. In Hebrew, it means that's the word used for marriage. In other words, when it says a person is intimate with somebody, that means that they married them.
Oh, okay.
We didn't have other relationships or other.
But actually, by law, he was not allowed to marry her because she was the widow of a king.
So it's an interesting question here, and that is, who is the real king? Who is the real power behind Ishbosheth? Is it Ishbosheth, the figurehead, who's the son of Shaul, or is it Avner, who really is, in all effect, he's the power?
Mm-hmm.
So it could be that Avner felt that because he's really running the country, he was like the king. So it's true that we have this figurehead. You know, Ishbosheth would be the one who would wear the funny robes, and you know, and would be in all the parades, and Avner was the one that kept the country going. And so he felt, perhaps Avner felt, that he really was like the king, and he was entitled to marry the queen because he was the real power. And that's his argument, in effect. Like, do you think I'm a nothing, that I'm not, that it's dishonorable to your father's memory to do? I'm not a dog catcher for Yehuda. It could be what he's saying also is that if I went over to the other side, I could get a better deal. You know, like that David would treat me a lot better. There's something that Avner sees here that just convinces him that Ishbosheth is not fit to be the king. He just I guess part of being a king is that you're loyal to your people, that you appreciate what they do for you, and if you could turn around, instead of appreciating what they do, you could insult them. Again, maybe it shouldn't have been done in front of other people. Maybe it was, yeah.
Oh, that's the thing, and and this woman was Saul's wife.
Mm-hmm.
So you could see how Ishbosheth
would take offense, right?
Yeah.
That's right. In other words, you're not my father. You have no right to do that. I understand.
Yeah. In the commentary on verse 7, it says that a widow of a king is forbidden in marriage to anyone,
right,
even to another king.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So, and a concubine is legally considered a widow.
Mm-hmm.
So what he's saying, I guess, is that regardless of who or what you are, that this woman is forbidden to you.
I see. Mm-hmm.
Off limits.
Off limits, right. Right, that's right.
Well, it may really have been. Okay.
Where does it say here that it was in front of other people?
Yeah.
So it's not so clear, but the wording sounds. The word.
Yeah.
In the end of verse 9, it says "v'tifko d'olai." The word "pekadim" almost means like an appointment. Mm-hmm. You made an appointment, like to this, to mention this at this time. It could be understood that just from his reaction that if it was really true and it was really inappropriate to do so why would he take such offense? But he says today. What's today? Is it that what just happened today? Is it what where we were today? So the truth is we don't know 100%, but there was something about the circumstances that this was mentioned. It could be on a different day, you could have told me, but today, the day that I worked so hard to keep you going, and today in front of everybody, so it's not clear exactly what it was that set him off, but there was something that definitely, Avner, from this point on, Avner has it. He's not working for this. That's it. He's out of here. So let's see what he says. First test. Go Yasser Lokim Lav Nevika Yosef Lo. He swears by Hashem, and we don't take Hashem's name in vain. Ki Kashanishbar Lashem Le David. He said, just like Hashem swore to David that he would be king, Kain Asalo. Now I will do. Lahaver, I'm going to move the kingdom Ibei Shaul from the house of Shaul, Lahokim Es Kisei David Al Yisrael. And I'm going to now switch my allegiance to David. The Al Yehuda Midan Vad Beersheba, and I'm not just going to allow him to have that one little kingdom of Yehuda, but I'm going to make David the king of the entire people of Israel. And let's see what Ishbosheth has to say. Ishbosheth kept his mouth shut. He couldn't say anything. He was so afraid. Avner was not a person to mess with. He was, again, he was a very powerful person. And he was very upset. A little bit hard to understand. Did Avner believe that Ishbosheth was meant to be king? So how would he change just based on a personal whim? I guess what you could say is that this showed him that he was really making a mistake. In other words, that Ishbosheth was not meant to be a king. A king is a person who is in control, who has a royal bearing, who does what's good to the people. And when he saw that the king was negative, was backstabbing, he just realized that he's just not meant to be king. I'm wrong. Now it's going to go to David where it's supposed to go.
Why would Ishbosheth accuse Abner of such a thing? It wasn't at all founded. Were there other people who were jealous of Abner and want to make trouble for him? Or I mean, where does it originate? Mm-hmm. If it's not true, mm-hmm. how would the king accuse him of that?
It could be they're surrounded with intrigue, or
there's always in the court.
Sure.
Yeah, it could be.
National Enquirer.
yeah. What'd you say? I'm sorry.
The National Enquirer.
Oh, that's right.
They used to say, "What was the senator from North Carolina? What was it?
Edwards."
Right.
Edwards.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So they stuck to the case until they.
He admitted he was the father. Right, that's right. Some people say that now that Ishbosheth had been king 2 years, so the truth is that many people assume that Shaul was only king 2 years. So it's almost like, okay, that's enough. It's a sign we've had enough of this Shaul being king, enough of this monarchy, it's time. That really Avner was finally, this just brought it to light. This just finally made, sometimes it takes an anger or it takes a fallout for things to become clear to a person. And so it just became clear to Avner that Ishbosheth was not the man. So Avner sends messengers to David. Now Avner isn't afraid to do this publicly. Like, it's just interesting. He goes right in front of, he tells Ishbosheth himself, that's it, I'm switching the allegiance. So he says, sends messengers to David underneath him, Lamor, Lemi, Haoretz, Lamor. He says, it's an interesting thing. He says, who does it belong to? Who really deserves to run the country? In other words, what kind of person deserves to... So, in other words, obviously, Avner was saying, I've come to recognize that you're right, it goes to you. Karsa briska iti. Let's make a deal. V'neyad imach lahasi v'lecha kol Yisrael. And I will bring the rest of the country on board. So that's the deal that Avner wants to make with David. Let's get together and I'll bring everybody on board. So that sounds good. Let's see what David says. Omer tov. Well, good. Aniyak resi bris. No problem. I'll even though to some degree they had fought before, but they had known each other. They were on the same team for many years. They fought together against the Plishtim. So David says, tov, good. I'll make a covenant with you. Ach, David, the one thing that I need. Very interesting. He says the following. There's one thing I gotta take care of first. Lo siras pana, I'm not gonna meet with you. My number one request is I want my wife. If you want to see me, I must have my wife back. As I'll say, there's nothing like that first love. David's first wife was the daughter of Shaul. So David insisted that she be given back. Now, this was a complicated thing because, according to many people, she was given to another man. Mm-hmm. And you can't, we really can't undo or do a marriage. David says the following over here. V'yishlech David melochem al Ishbosheth. Now, Ishbosheth, this was his request. So David sent messengers to Shaul's son, Ishbosheth Lamor. He says, Tana is Ishti. Now he wanted his wife. Now he didn't want to make it seem like he was taking a woman that belonged to someone else. He wanted Shaul's own son to recognize that she was really his wife. And so he says the following, Tana is Ishti es Michal sher rastali b'mea arelis plishtim. Give me my wife that I earned. He had won in combat. He had risked his life to kill 100 plishtim. And he felt she was dear to him because he had struggled very hard. He had risked his life many times to kill Plishtim in order to marry her. Now, there was a debate about between him and Shaul whether that engagement or that promise had been binding. There was a so David over here is asking Shaul's son to admit that she really was his wife, that he was the legal that whatever happened afterwards was not binding. Really, she was his wife, and he wanted her back. So let's see.
Doesn't it say that he actually killed 200 Plishtim in the text when we read it? He was asked.
Right.
100, but uh-huh. He actually brought 200.
I guess the deal though was on the 100. He might have done more. The Yishak Ishboshet, so Ishboshet doesn't have any argument with that. He takes her away from the man who she was with. And now his name was Palti, and previously he was called Palti, and over here he's called Paltiel. Mm-hmm. He has God's name attached to it. So we mentioned that we have a tradition that he was one of the holiest men alive, in that when he was given this woman and was told by the king to marry her, and he slept in the same room, the same bed, that he wouldn't allow himself to have relations with her because he felt that maybe she was really another man's wife. Mm-hmm. And the tradition has it that he took a sword into his bed and he said, if I do anything wrong, then I'm going to, you know, I should feel the point of the sword. And so he was, he goes down in history as one of the greatest people. Verse 5, Be'elik Ita Isha, and he went with her, he was her man. Holakuban, he was crying. It was an emotional moment. Ad Bechurim, until they came to Bechurim. The Yomei Lav, Abner Lech Shuv, and Abner says to him, you know, it almost sounds like he didn't want to let her go, or he wanted to keep her, and Abner says, no, let her go home, you know, it's time to go back. So, it's an interesting thing here. There's an interesting rule like this. David was going to be the next monarch. And the first monarch that was ordained by God was from the house of Shaul. And monarchy, kingship is inherited. It goes from father to child. Ishbosheth is going, it was the only surviving son in the line of the kingship at this point. Yonasan has a child also, but he's not eligible to be king because he was crippled. We'll learn about him later. Now, Ishbosheth, we'll see shortly, but he's not going to live much long after this. And David is going to become the next king. Is David a new king? Or how does David go about becoming, is he following? There's always a question when you start something, are you starting something new, or are you continuing building on what previous people have built? So there's an interesting rule that a kingship can pass also through a daughter. And David was married to Shaul's daughter. And so now that David is going to be married to Michal, and there were no other surviving sons that were eligible to be king, in effect, David would be inheriting the kingship through his wife. We didn't have, you know, queens that ran the country in those days.
Like the Rebbe.
What?
Like the Rebbe, in a way.
Right.
The last Rebbe. Mm-hmm. You know,
Through the wife, right. So it could be that David not only got the kingship by being anointed by Shmuel, and not only got the kingship by being approved by the Jewish people, but in certain ways he inherits it as being the son-in-law of the house of Shaul. And so that's also part of the equation here. Okay. So Udvar Abner Hayoim Zikne Yisrael. Now what happens? So Abner keeps good on his word. He goes to the elders. Usually the elders mean, it doesn't just mean old people, the elders usually means the respected ones. We've always had, in Jewish community, we always have the sages. The elders means we've always looked up to older people as being the ones who have the wisdom, who we respect. That's the word zikne, the elders of Israel. Even down in Egypt, we had the elders. So Abner goes to the elders. And he says, Lemo, Gam Tamo, Gam Shoshim. He says, David's not the newest kid on the block. He was around before. In other words, he had to remind them that people sometimes, he wanted to remind them that David had a good track record. He said, you guys always wanted him. You remember when some of them had, the elders were around in the early years when he had been the hero of the Jewish people and he had won the battles of the Plishtim. So he says, you remember how he risked his life in the early years? And you guys had been all for it. So that was the... Oh, it's getting late. Okay. So I guess we'll stop here on 18. But Abner now is switching the allegiance to David, and he's going to start that process of the transfer of power. Unfortunately, transfer of power doesn't always go smooth, as we'll see. But we'll see the beginning of the movement from the house of Shaul to the house of David.